Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Kevin Atwood, who is President and CEO at Bank of Cadiz and Trust Co. Kevin started in banking in 1985, where he first began working for American Pioneer Savings Bank in Orlando, Florida, as a commercial lender. In 1988, he returned back to Kentucky and worked in commercial lending at Bowling Green Bank and Trust Co. until 1997. Bowling Green Bank was later acquired by what was then Aria Bank Shares and one of its affiliate banks in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and he joined their staff as a senior lender. That bank was later acquired by BB&T, where Kevin became responsible for all small business lending staffs in seven cities in western Kentucky, until he eventually became the city executive in the Hopkinsville office. In 2004, he accepted the position of Executive Vice President and Senior Leader at Bank of Cadiz and Trust Co. and became the President and Board Member in 2016, where he plans to stay. Kevin, welcome to the show today.
Glad for being here, Dan. Appreciate you for asking me.
So, Kevin, I'd like to start by asking all of my guests, how did you first get started in the banking industry? So, I know you began first at American Pioneer Savings Bank in 85. What was it that got you in the door?
Well, my whole entire family basically has been in banking. My grandfather, my father, and then I guess I didn't know anything else. So I saw where he always got a paycheck. So I thought maybe I need to do that. So my dad went to LSU, to the Graduate School of Banking. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if he was his roommate or it was a friend that he met there that they stayed in touch that worked at American Pioneer. And when it became time that I needed to go get a job and get out of school, mm-hmm. I moved to Florida and just started looking for a job. And Dad said, you ought to call Dean. And I did. And Dean took a chance on me. And it's strange how it works. But I was there for 3 years. And I ended up coming back to Bowling Green, Kentucky, where I went to college at mm-hmm. Western Kentucky University. And I never dreamed I'd be back, but they called me, and it was a fraternity brother of mine, and said, hey, they're looking for a lender and they're getting ready to call you. And I said, I don't think so. It was March and I had a tee time play golf in Orlando and it was snowing in Kentucky, but it happened. I went back and been here ever since.
Yeah, in Kentucky in the wintertime is definitely a little bit different than Florida in the wintertime.
A little different from Orlando. A little different. But
I'm actually from Michigan myself, so winters and everything like that, I'm used to those.
Yeah.
So as I understand it, Kevin, I want to kind of jump into some of the conversation, some of the topics that we had selected for today. You just went through 3 weeks of examination. Is that correct?
Correct. I had an IT examination with the Federal Reserve, and then 2 weeks of safety and soundness with the Kentucky Department of Financial Institutions.
Oh man, so it's been a busy 3 weeks.
I have had all the fun I can enjoy with examinations.
Yeah. Ready to maybe sit back, kick the feet up a little bit, take a breather before we jump back in.
I told one of my board members today that I felt like I was on vacation because I was just making loans today. I'm not filling out paperwork for examiners and that kind of thing.
You were just doing your job, being a vacation. That's always an interesting feeling.
Yeah, no doubt.
So then how big is the Bank of Cadiz and Trust Co.? How big of an institution are you?
Yeah, we're $138 million in assets. So we're a really small community bank with our headquarters in Cadiz, Kentucky, which Cadiz is in western Kentucky in a very rural agricultural community. But we're blessed to have two large man-made lakes, Kentucky Lake and Barkley Lake, right in our in our region. So we have a lot of retirees here too. So pretty much ag, and then a lot of folks come from the north that move to our lakes, and because it is a beautiful place to live in a much more laid-back environment than a lot of the larger cities. So we have branches. Our main office is here in Cadiz, which Cadiz is population of about 2,500 people.
Okay.
And then we have two other offices in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, where I originally from and then moved from, and Hopkinsville is about 37,000 people. And then Murray, Kentucky is our other office. And that's where Murray State University is. A lot of people have heard of that. It's a regional university. And Murray's about 15,000 people, I guess, something like that. So we serve smaller markets. There are a lot of different players, though, in the market, a lot of different lenders. Mm-hmm. We're in the same MSA as Clarksville, Tennessee. Which we're on the border with Tennessee, and Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne, is in our communities. They're both in Trinity County and Christian County, which is Cady's and Hopkinsville. So we've got a lot of military presence too. We're very unique, but huge agriculture area, particularly Christian and Trinity counties.
So you've got a pretty diverse customer base that you're drawing from, then, with military, retiree, and ag.
And Hopkinsville has really grown from an industrial standpoint, really related to agriculture, but recently also with EV, there's some new battery plants for electric vehicles. They're building battery plants there, but a lot of the other plants here in Hopkinsville are related to agriculture. Like there's a couple of plants that do milling of wheat. They're great big outfits. And then we have a large ethanol plant too, because there's so much corn and wheat grown in this area. So then with that
such a diverse customer base that you're pulling from, how easy is compliance for you? Because I know you just went through those exams and you don't have to dig into your results or anything like that, but being the size you are, would you say compliance is easier because you're a small bank, or would you say that it's harder? What's your perspective on it?
It's harder because there really isn't any delineation for size for banks in terms of the regulations are the regulations, and particularly the consumer regulations are pretty onerous now. And I think they were, the intention was good for them, but they're really tough, particularly for a small bank like us. We only have total in all markets, 33 employees. It's really tough to meet the criteria demands that are in place to do just the paperwork. I actually had an attorney, I was making him a home loan one day, and I had an attorney complain to me about the paperwork. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. You're the guys that caused this. I don't think that's true. Well, yes, it is. But that's the toughest part. We, in our bank, it would be very tough for one person to be the compliance officer that could handle every aspect of banking in our community, because you have to do it on a part-time basis, because we don't have the luxury of having a full-time compliance officer. We can't afford them if we could find them, because they're people with those skills are really hard to find in rural areas like where we are. So we made the decision. And with the staff of our size, unfortunately, we're all starting to get a little age on us. Or as my granddaddy would say, I'm getting long in the tooth. We lose some people to retirement, and unfortunately, illness and passing away. So we made the decision to go with the virtual banking. I mean, the virtual compliance officer, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
With Review Alliance, and I couldn't be more thrilled. We haven't had a compliance exam yet. We've had IT and safety and soundness, but I know we're going to be prepared better than, and not that we weren't before, but I know we're going to be better prepared from a documentation standpoint, which is what examiners love.
They love their documentation. That's for sure.
The treats, yeah. I have no doubt we'll be better prepared for that.
So before you switched to the VCO side of things, or the virtual compliance officer, if I remember correctly, you actually had two part-time compliance officers that you were running. Is that correct?
Right.
So
we had one person that was on the loan side that did the lending type compliance.
Okay.
And another person that did the deposit type compliance.
Okay. And were they each like 30 hours a week about that you'd run them, and then?
Well, gosh, that was the other thing. You could never there just weren't enough hours in the day for those folks mm-hmm. to be able to do what was the deposit compliance officer also was our BSA officer. And
she banking house officer.
Yeah, she was the backup IT person. And they're just, you know, I knew that, and we never had any problems from a compliance exam, but I knew that we were scratching the surface. We were barely doing what we were servicing the customers, and customers always got what they needed. But I knew that we, you know, for what the government wants in terms of regulatory compliance documentation, it was tough for them. So, and then when one of them became ill and was no longer able to work, that's when we had to make a change. And I just happened to open the Kentucky Bankers monthly magazine, and on the inside cover was an ad for the VCO program through Review Alliance, and said, I'm going to give it a call. So advertising worked.
Hey, advertising, it gets the job done.
It worked.
So then, as president and CEO of a smaller bank, I'm sure you were wearing multiple hats throughout the day, that you're acting this capacity, acting that capacity. You do a lot of commercial lending yourself, correct?
I do all of our commercial lending.
Okay.
In Cadiz, and I do a significant amount of it in Hopkinsville. Murray really doesn't have as much. That branch is newer for us than the others, and we really only have pretty much a consumer type presence there. But here, Hopkinsville and Cadiz, I do all of it in Cadiz and 75% of it in Hopkinsville. But I'm the senior lender too, as well as the president of the bank. So anything that's over, you know, the individual loan officer's authority, then they come to me.
So talk to me about some of those other hats you're wearing. Like what hats are you putting on during the day?
Well, thank goodness we recently got a new roof, but we've had monsoon rains, which is a good thing. I see lots of parts of the country are in drought. Right. And we're not
in Texas.
Yeah, we've had phenomenal rain this year. But prior to the finally getting a new roof put on, we had some pretty severe leaks, and we had to mop up the water. And so I was mopping in the lobby, not by myself. We had other folks too. So, I mean, at this size bank, and that's fine. I mean, we're very community-oriented, people-oriented. We have people that come in just to say hi, just to sit down and visit, which I've worked when BB&T bought us. It was a larger regional, you know, bank, and it's just a different environment than it is in a small rural area. And so everybody just pitches in and helps. I also serve on the Bluegrass Community Bankers State Board for bankers. That's all okay. Community banking. And I think we're even the smallest bank that's a member of it too. We're pretty small. There are some smaller banks in Kentucky, but we're pretty small. So we all have to wear a lot of hats.
Mm-hmm.
I go do inspections, construction inspections. You name it. Anything's related to lending. I serve as a courier taking cash to the ATM sometimes, and I just do a lot of different stuff. But it's fun. I enjoy that. And another thing that our bank does is we sponsor what's called a survivor's dinner, and it's there's been a lot of cancer in our area, and for various different reasons. And I'm sure tobacco, because we're such a big tobacco state.
Yeah.
Probably a cause of it, but we sponsor a cancer survivors dinner, and myself as well as several other employees, we serve everybody meals that night. And that's just awesome. Something it's really, you know, we like to do, and I think the community, you know, enjoys it. So
really it's a community bank that's small enough to be able to still really give back to the community. Is that how you really would pitch yourself?
Absolutely. That's another thing of my day is various different groups come in. Hey, we need help with, can you help sponsor our little league baseball team? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of involvement with the local schools. We do a lot of things with them. Mm-hmm. We're very involved in United Way, our Rotary clubs, that kind of stuff. We pretty much in Katy's, I mean, it's changing as retirees move in, but you pretty much know everybody or know somebody that knows.
That's gotcha, connected. Perfect. Yeah. So I did have a question then. You don't have to mention any names, but are there any big box banks that are around you or nearby you, or is it really just such a small town that you're the bank?
In Katy's, there are three banks. We're the only local bank. Okay. One of them is First Financial, which is out of Illinois, and they moved here a couple of years ago. They bought a local bank. And then there's another that's in Katy's that they're not a big bank, but they are located, their headquarters are in another city in Western Kentucky.
Okay.
Hopkinsville and Murray have a couple of larger, there's a Regions Bank in Murray, and then in Hopkinsville, there's a U.S. Bank, and what used to be BB&T is now Truist.
So then let me ask you, what do you do in a situation where you have a potential or prospective customer comes into the bank, and they're looking for a product or service that maybe a bank of your scale can't necessarily offer? Are you more likely to say, hey, sorry, we can't help you, and just kind of let them go? Are you sending, like, hey, maybe check out this other bank? How do you handle it? How do you process those?
Well, it depends on what the situation is. If it's loans, I have a really close relationship with other bankers in my area. Mm-hmm. And if it's a loan that's above our legal lending limit, we will act mm-hmm. as the lead bank and participate those loans with Great. Other banks.
Yeah.
Try to always do that with other local banks. We're really the only local bank that's locally owned here in Katy's. There is one in Hopkinsville, but I really try to, in those situations, I don't get involved with the bigger banks. We're all trying to help one another, you know.
So perfect. Yeah.
We'll participate with other smaller community banks. They're all bigger than us, but that's what we do. And vice versa. They do that. They call me a lot too, where I'll participate with them. So it's been really good. Yesterday, I had a situation, it's ironic that you asked, where a lady asked me about, she was going somewhere, she was going to Europe somewhere.
Okay.
And she asked me about, she needed to come in and buy some euros. And I said,
yeah, foreign currency.
Don't have that in Katy's. You know, so yeah, I did refer her to BB&T in Hopkinsville. That would be, you know, somebody that would do that. But that's what happened.
I appreciate the fact that you have that relationship with the community banks around you to be able to work together to meet and serve the needs of the community. Because, I mean, lending is obviously such a huge part of what banking do, and it fills a need of what the community needs. So the fact that you're able to be the lead participant and participate out those loans, I think that's fantastic. That works really great. So how do you feel... like, what is the value of a community bank? So most of our audience is going to be small banks, mid-sized banks. We don't necessarily pull too many of our listeners from large banks.
Right.
What's the role of the small bank? Because, I mean, large banks, they provide a tons of conveniences. They provide all your technology. They're usually leading the curve when it comes to things like mobile integration and mm-hmm. digital integration. What's the role of a small bank inside of that?
You know, I think particularly here in Katy's, the thing that people come to see me about is really two things. One thing is, and I should have elaborated on this, we have a huge Amish community here.
Mm.
So they, you know, they really are, you hear about the term off the grid. They truly are off the grid. Very few of them have a telephone. And if they do, it's for a business. Because like some of them will have mm-hmm. nurseries, some woodworking shops, that kind of thing. So they'll have a phone for that. But the majority, as an individual, they don't. So we get a lot of those folks. Matter of fact, one of the people that we just lost to cancer, that was one of our employees, she would get not calls, be letters from the Amish that were moving from Pennsylvania.
Wow.
They were coming here, and the word had gotten out in the Amish community, you need to go to the Bank of Katy's because they work with people in our community. And because of certain things with their beliefs, they don't have some of the information that governmental regulations require. For example, photo IDs. They can't have their picture made. So that's part of their belief. So we made accommodations after talking with the government. What type of identification can we have from them? They'll have an ID card, but it won't have a photo on it.
Okay.
So that's one of the things the typical person in that community would not be able to go to a regional bank or a large bank and get the kind of service they get from us. We literally have them tie up their horses and buggies in our parking lots.
That's awesome.
Had to go out and clean up
a little bit.
Just like the mopping done here, there's time to go out there. But
many hats, many hats.
Yeah, that's one of the things that differentiates, a community bank. You wouldn't be able to see that. I don't think. Well, I know you could. You wouldn't see the accommodation and the workarounds that we'll work with for those folks that they probably wouldn't experience at a larger bank.
I can honestly say, so I used to work at a big bank when I was first starting out my career in the banking industry. And I can honestly say I've never had to worry about shoveling up poop or whatever the parking lot. That would be a first one for me. Not that I necessarily complain, but yeah, that would be a first one for me.
Yeah. And I don't know what the percentage is of our population now, but it's grown significantly. And a lot of those folks, they may live, we're rural, but they live in some really far out areas. And it's hard for them to get here. It's an all day trip for them to come to the bank and back in a horse and buggy. If you're going 10 or 15 miles,
takes a while.
That's tough. So we go to them a lot too. Now we don't go and pick up the deposits and that kind of thing, but a lot of times it's tough because they have to write us a letter or they will ride in a car with somebody else. So they'll come in but a lot of times we'll have to go to them to make the deal work, to facilitate the closing. So that's the thing. And the other thing I think that differentiates us is, and it was really the first time I ever saw this was at the Bank of Katy's. When I first started here, interest rates, we've been used to rates being really, really low, obviously.
Things have obviously been changing quite a bit. Yeah.
It's been huge. But when I first came here, mortgage rates, I'm talking about fixed secondary market mortgage rates, were probably 6%. But we don't do fixed rate mortgages at the bank account. We give referral fees for it, but we only do adjustable rate mortgages. And the reason why is we're not big enough to take a lot of risk on doing a 3% fixed rate mortgage for 30 years.
Right.
It's tough for us to balance that. So we've done adjustable rate. It surprised me when I got here how large a percentage of portfolio we had that was adjustable rate mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, when I was growing up, when I first started working in banking, prime was 18%.
Yeah.
And, people think about, they think today's high.
18%. It was a slightly different time back then.
Yeah, but now from a savings standpoint, you could get some huge money if you were not a borrower, that was great. But my point is, all these people, and I would ask them as they would come in, don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled that you have your mortgage with us, but why don't you, that we would have a situation where their ratios may be a little tight, that type of thing. And I'd say, why don't you have a fixed rate mortgage? You could go on a longer term. And they're like, because, and most of them were older people, but not all. A lot of them were just folks that grew up here, and they'd say, because I want to have somebody I can talk to face to face.
That makes sense. I get that.
And you see that more here than I have anywhere else that I've been, and they're willing to pay just a little bit more or take that interest rate risk.
It's worth the service.
To I have somebody then come in and talk to if there's a problem. And, you know, with an ag community like us, we're pretty weather dependent. So, you know, if a farmer, if we've had a drought year, or, we've got a huge beef cattle population in our area. Hay, you know, if you have a drought, you can't get hay, that kind of thing. Yeah. They want to have somebody to talk to work with them. So that's what really differentiates us.
So then let me ask you that kind of as a platform into our final question. If you could give one piece of advice to banks listening today, so whatever our audience may be, what piece of advice would you give them?
You know, I think, and basically it's going to be the golden rule. It's treat others as you want to be treated. But from the banking standpoint, don't be overly conservative on your underwriting, but your asset quality is the key for everything. Right now, with interest rates being as they are, you know, so high, and now some banks are starting to have some issues with delinquency because rates have gone up enough that it's starting to really get in folks' pockets. If you underwrite to prepare for those downturns and build in enough cushion, typically, I'm going to knock on wood here, my 38th year of doing this, typically it's worked that if you have enough cushion in there, you're going to be able to survive the tough times. Right. And if it gets so bad, if their credit's been good enough and they have a history that they're going to be able to work it out, I can work with them. It allows me the opportunity to be able to make some accommodations and do some modifications where I can, you know, do that. And the other thing is I always tell people, I'm going to tell you the best thing I can do from the get-go. I don't do any negotiation. I'm going to always tell you, I don't want to be like it's a buying a car situation. You know?
No, those are car sale tactics.
Yeah, I want to treat you like I want to be treated. So that's
appreciate that.
And that to me is the difference. And I'm just a firm believer that if you do the right thing, it's going to work out for you. So that's what it would be. And don't get in any exotic products.
I can appreciate that. Well, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us for today's show.
You bet. Thanks for asking me. Thank you, Dan.
For the rest of you listening in, that's Banking Matters.